Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
We are joined yet again by a friend of the show, Gary Linnemeyer, who has a full career in law enforcement, has worked military police with the Air Force, has worked at the Pentagon, has a very lengthy career and lots of training. And we've had him on before just to discuss interrogation techniques in general. But Gary, thanks for joining us today to dig into a case that's pretty close to our hearts.
Oh, thank you for having me on here. I've seen some of the guests that you've had in the past, and I find it kind of an honor to be included with those. There's been some excellent interviews, and I'm very happy to be here and to help out whenever I can.
I know that we were speaking offline a little bit ago, and you're adding something else to your already impressive resume. Why don't you tell us what you're doing right now?
Well, right now I'm in the process of trying to get my New Jersey private investigator's license. So that's very exciting for me. It's something that I've thought about for the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. And I thought, what better time than the present?
That'd be incredible. And, you know, I think Jamie and I are going to continue to do podcasts until we feel like the Lord doesn't want us to do it anymore. So hopefully over the next few years, we can work with you some as a investigator. I think that'd be awesome.
So I'd love that. I'd like that a lot. I appreciate the confidence you have in me.
So we did an episode on Grant Solomon, and it was not the first time that we have brought up his name in an episode. We've done interviews with Lauren Conlon. I feel like we've spoken about Grant Solomon a few times on the podcast, but we recently did an episode that focused on what happened to Grant. And I always want to say Grant's case, but I always correct myself because there's not a case. There was never an open investigation on what took place that day that took Grant Solomon's life. It was declared an accident. If you all are listening and you're not familiar, I would hit pause temporarily, go back and listen to that, then come back to this because you want to talk about your approach that you would take on the case if you were the investigator that was called out, correct?
I'd like to do that. I found it to be very interesting. And I'm not here to say that any police department did anything wrong or botched anything or anything like that. I'm just saying this is maybe how I would have approached it myself. So,
I'll let you take the floor. So, I guess what would you start with?
Well, you want to start anytime there's an investigation. It kind of depends on how you're involved at the very start. As far as like with the 911 call, for example, if you're responding to that call, you know, as a patrol officer, you're not going to hear the 911 call itself. You're going to get a dispatch from your dispatcher and you're going to respond. And it depends on how they put that out. If they say there's an accident at a certain location, you'll respond to that. If there's an accident with injuries, they'll say that, which I assume that's what was sent out at the time.
Have you ever responded, sorry, John, in your work to a call that you suspected to be an accident, but when you get there, you did realize that maybe there's something more going on here?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I was always taught that an accident, you have to treat it like a crime scene, no matter what. An accident, especially with a vehicle accident, it's almost always outside. There's so many factors environmental factors that can go into it. But you want to treat it like a crime scene because it is, you know, a lot of times you have to find fault, and those are violations of state law. As far as a traffic accident, somebody's at fault for it. So you want to treat it like any crime scene, especially like in this case. I know that there was some conjecture as far as whether it was a civil matter or not, because it occurred on public or private property. Whether or not where it came to rest finally was in like a government easement because it was a ditch, you know. But you want to, you know, if you have a traffic accident and it ends up being because one driver was intoxicated for some reason, you have to have everything in order as far as, you know, if you want to charge anyone with anything later on. So when you get there, you want to treat it. I've trained officers and I've tried to, and you want to make that into, you want to treat it like a crime scene. You want to get it as much as you can with as fluid a scene as that can be.
I don't know how to articulate this, Gary, but my question is, you know, every cop, every officer has a life, has something going on. You know, they have their job, but then they have their life, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this happened, but let's just, for an example, say that perhaps this accident, quotation mark, mm-hmm. took place right around the time of shift change. Okay. So what if, what kind of safety nets are in place to prevent, you know, a cop rolling into this scene and saying, you know what, this was an accident, we're all good here, let's call it a day, I'm going home. Versus this should be looked at a little bit more closely and I'm going to have to stay here and work this. Is there some kind of safety net to prevent a cop who may not be doing his best job that day and wants to get off the scene and declares it an accident when there may be more to it? Or is that a decision that's made by multiple people and not just one officer who responded? Hopefully what I'm asking makes sense.
I think it does. I think you're asking if maybe they're not going to look into it as close if they're closer to getting home than
reason.
If you, like, very first start of the day, you're coming on and you've got all day to work it. I think that's a valid question. Of course, I'm not in their mind. I don't know what as far as at that time, but every place I've ever worked, if you went to an accident, you're there until it's done. So
I guess my question really, when you boil it down, is does one officer who is the first to respond, is he able to just declare that an accident? And then from that point on, it's like, at what point, Jamie, help me. But is he able to say this was an accident, we're going to work it as an accident and we're done? Or is there ever a time where somebody would say, actually, no, this doesn't look like an accident. Like, what's the procedures there for declaring it an accident? And then it's
how much autonomy does each officer have in making those decisions?
Perfect. Thank you.
Oh, that's an excellent question. In your bigger departments, you might have where you're working it and you're saying, okay, it's an accident. And you may have a supervisor come on scene and say, and you bounce off of him, say a sergeant arrives and you show him what you see, and he might say, you know, it's an accident, or he might look at it, or you might see it and say, this doesn't seem like one. And so you want to bring all the evidence up to him and say that. And then it's whenever you have someone of a higher rank come on scene, then they're going to say what is and what not go, or what am I trying to say? Whether or not how you're going to proceed with it.
Okay. Sorry, I threw a curveball out there. I was curious to know, like,
No,
could
that's
one
fine.
Investigator or one detective, cop, whatever, be enough to throw off the entire thing?
So I think the first responder is the most, it can be one of the most crucial parts when you get there, because like I said, an accident scene can be so fluid. And you have environmental factors and so forth. It can definitely make the difference. If you don't secure that crime scene, if you don't secure that accident area, that scene, evidence can be lost. Evidence can be overlooked. Especially when you have a scene like in the case we're looking at here, where you've got basically you have the one witness to what happened at the very start, and that's what you're going on. But you get there and you see what's going on. especially when you're dealing with a young person. I kind of, when I was doing my research, I kind of looked into whether or not, you know, whether they were required to do an autopsy or not. Because a lot of states, if you're a minor, it's mandatory that you do an autopsy, especially if it's an unnatural act or something like that. Right. So I looked into it. Tennessee state law says that if a county medical examiner can order an autopsy if it's an unnatural or a suspicious death. So as an investigator, if I'm looking at that and I'm seeing, maybe not at the time, but if you're looking at it when you're on scene and go, you know, this is a death that occurred out of the ordinary, right, whether or not it was a vehicle accident or not, you know, this is something that's out of the ordinary. And the fact that he was 18 made him not a minor,
right,
in Tennessee. So you wouldn't necessarily have to go with the parents saying, I don't want to do an autopsy, or declining an autopsy. Right. Does that make sense?
So as for in the instance of Grant, he was an adult. It would have required the medical examiner, or perhaps a doctor could have saw something and said, oh, this seems questionable, let's do an autopsy. They had every chance to. Ultimately, the parents didn't really have a say in the matter.
Right. If they wanted to go ahead and do an autopsy, according to the law that I saw, the Tennessee law I saw, said it was the county medical examiner's job. But a doctor could very well refer that and say that. I think an investigator could too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
From what I saw, it sounds to me like he was alive when upon the first arrival. Is that what you're gathering?
Yeah. So you get the 911 call from Aaron, and when you show up on scene, you're going to see a pickup truck with its back wheels up, mm-hmm, on a sidewalk, front wheels across a ditch, and Grant underneath the truck.
Right.
He did not pass away until he got to the hospital. So there was blood coming out of his mouth, some hard, right, breathing, and there, depending on what you believe, which of Aaron's stories you believe, in and out of consciousness, perhaps, or mostly, mm-hmm, unconscious, but kind of moving around a little bit.
Right. Cause in the 911 call, you could hear, it almost sounded like he was saying to Grant,
yeah,
you know, turn your head and turn this. But then you have witnesses that say he was further away from,
yeah,
there.
Yeah. He never went down to the truck. He stayed up, yeah, around the building there, and it was on Water Street in Gallatin, Tennessee. And I got to go there, mm-hmm, when I went down for Crime Con, and it's from the building down to the ditches. Like, there's no way he could have really made out what was happening with Grant's face from that distance.
Well, that's what was so hard to tell by the photos that I saw, was exactly the distance between where the truck was parked, or supposedly parked by the building, and to where it was at rest.
Yeah.
How far would you say that was?
I want to say 60 feet or so was the, okay, estimate of how far. And again, the claim was that he was dragged by this truck. This truck, of course, was a Tacoma set up high. So,
mm-hmm,
when you would have arrived on scene, he was under it, but not trapped. It wasn't touching him in any way, and there was no evidence of being dragged.
Okay, I see that. Because when I'm looking at the crime scene photos, not crime scene photos, the photos they took of the accident, there didn't appear to be a lot of room under there, but it sounds like he wasn't pinned underneath it.
He was not pinned at all.
Right.
I always get stuck on the fact that nothing was out of place as far as scuff marks, drag marks. The clothing did not have any, if he was laying in grass, correct, Jamie?
Yeah. There were rocks and, mm-hmm, and grass. I think most of his body was on the rocks.
Yeah. No grass stains, no damage from rocks. It just seems, it doesn't seem possible that he was dragged by a car.
And when we say rocks, we're not talking gravel. We're talking like softball sized filler rocks that you'll see in a ditch that are big and pointy. And if you landed on one, could absolutely do a lot of damage to your head.
Yeah.
When I was looking at those photos, I thought to my, I was trying to think to myself, if it didn't happen the way he said it happened, how could it go the, how, what else could have happened? And that's where I'm getting stuck at, as far as, how did he get under there? How did the truck get to where it was? If it didn't roll back, then how did it come into the part? And that's why an investigation would have really helped.
And I think
an autopsy,
a reenactment is I think the big thing that everybody wished we would have seen is some kind of reenactment. When people got to the scene, they thought the truck had come on from the highway into the ditch, not down from the parking lot. So a reenactment of just, I don't think the truck could have possibly ended up in that position based on how steep it was. But John asked earlier about that decision. They were on scene for less than an hour and made the decision not to do that. As a department, is there pretty much an accident reconstruction person? Does every department have one? And why would they have chosen not to do that here?
You normally would have, in any department, you would have at least one person that's had reconstruction training. Smaller departments might not have that, but that's when you, if you have a situation where you have a death at a scene like that, there's resources you could go to. If you didn't have anyone that was specialized in that, you could go through the state police. You could go through, you know, any number of resources, a bigger department to come in and do that.
How does time work against you there? Like with accident reconstruction, you could always get another Tacoma. Like what could be lost there if you don't do it immediately? And I guess what I'm asking is, if somebody did it right now, would it be useful?
I think it would give you an idea that if you took a similar truck, a similar make and model, and did the same thing to it, you could actually go in and have it happen. You could reenact it, but it would be difficult after a period of time, especially if you're using a different vehicle.
Right.
Because different vehicles react differently.
Right.
You could have the exact same model of truck. And, you know, if you're trying to reenactment under to where the, say, for example, the steering wheel turns
right
a different way. It hits a different rock in the road. It hits, once it gets into the ditch, did it hit a different way to where it's going to turn a different way?
And
I mean, it could be.
It's been 4 years, so the landscape could have changed enough to cause something like that to happen too.
I'm looking at the, there are pictures of that day with the fire truck on scene, and there's a pretty decent grassy patch before it gets to those rocks. So it's probably, I mean, just looking at this picture, I would say 15 to 20 feet and then very sharp incline and then ditch and then those big gravel.
Right.
There are no tire tracks in the grass.
And grass stains on Grant.
Yeah. And I'm a country boy. I can tell if somebody's been in my yard because of tire tracks. I have I know my lawnmower marks, and I know, like I have a grass company that comes, and I know this is so weird, but I'm OCD. Like I know when they've been here based on the tracks they leave. There's no marks in this, and it's taller grass. Nothing seems out of place from this truck rolling through there.
You're going to have, with that tall of grass, I would think, my opinion is that you would have a, you know, along with tracks, I would consider tracks not only like tracks you would get on a off of a tread, but you would also have a, I would call it a swath.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You would have that tailgate area. You would have that place where it would go through.
And I would think, again, that decline, just guessing based on eyeballing it, but I would say from the rocks up to where the grass starts, it's probably a 10-foot drop, and it's really steep. I would think that a truck going over that would hit a bumper, a fender, or something on the rocks, on the sidewalk. Like, there would be damage to the vehicle as well. So
there is, the rear bumper of the vehicle is damaged.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's pulled. It looks like it's like dented in.
It's pulled down. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, which is consistent with backing over rocks at an angle like that.
Okay.
But yeah, I just don't see, and I guess these pictures aren't the best, but I just don't see the tracks up at the top that you would expect.
Yeah. So Aaron also said there were three other people there at the scene that were never identified. I don't even know where to go with that. At what point do you give up looking for witnesses? I guess after you deem it an accident and no longer need them, but what's your take on the three mystery men?
I was just about ready to call them the mystery men. Yeah. I don't like having mystery men in my investigation. I likened it to the Brooklyn Farthing case where you have the one unidentified man in there. I'm like, somebody knows who that is.
Yep.
Especially if you're riding in the same car with them. Now, I don't know if you saw this article, but I saw an article that was dated the end of March where they interviewed the one witness from the training center.
Right.
And he said that when he came out, he saw three people wearing high visibility vests,
which he had not said before. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know as far as the accuracy of that report or.
Right.
I leave it to you to, you know, I'm not, you know, it would coincide with what he said.
Yeah.
But it's so far, it's what, 4 years later that he says this.
So. Right. And even so, if they're, let's say, construction workers that stop to help, are they really going to leave the scene of a dead young man just to go get to the job site? I don't think so. Maybe
the only reason I would think they would is if they're illegal immigrants that don't want to be, you know, found out, or if they also, you know, if they give their name and information as a witness and then they have a warrant, they're going to jail. Yeah. So
okay,
that was my thought on what would make me leave the scene.
Okay. I don't think a criminal like you do, John.
Sorry, man.
It's good.
to find a criminal, you have to think like a criminal.
True.
When I saw that article, when I heard the 911 call, I thought if they had a high visibility vest, they could be anything from an electric company working in the area to landscapers to tree service, but there's no trees in that area.
Right.
But as an investigator, I have to, you know, when you're gathering, I put all this under follow-up. You know, you have to find out who are my witnesses, who are possible witnesses. And that just comes from doing a full investigation. I don't know how far they went to try to find these mystery people.
Was there video of a truck that went by around the same time that would have a logo on it for Dan's Construction or, you know, Larry's Lawnmower Service? I don't know. I'm hell bent. If I wanted to find them, I'd find them.
They're a business. That's a major road. There are businesses all along the roadway there, but this was also 2 months into the pandemic shutdown. So,
right.
I think we were all trying to figure out how to live then. Like, what are we supposed to do? I guess law enforcement was trying to figure some stuff out on their own as well. So maybe that played a role in not being able to find witnesses, or I don't know. That was 2 months after we were told not to leave our houses.
Right. I wouldn't think that would hinder, but you're right. It could have been a policy at that time. That doesn't mean you can't call people on the phone. You can't put it in the newspaper and say, you know, we're looking for anyone that was there at the time. If you know of anything, let us know.
Yeah.
But in my case file, I would have that. And I would say, in the follow-up, I'd say, okay, I need to find these guys and do that.
So I'm going to insert you now. You're a private eye. You're okay. You have everything that we have. What are your biggest red flags?
The biggest red flags to me was just not taking proper care of the crime scene. And I'm going to call it a crime scene because right. That's what it was. Especially if someone comes in later on and says, well, even at the fact that if I'm looking at it and I'm seeing evidence that doesn't jibe with the story that I'm getting. And then later on you have someone else that comes in and says, you know, we think that this is something else. And that, and to the two together, it should warrant a full investigation. It should, the red flags were a lot. The position that he was in, the position of the vehicle. I racked my mind when I was looking at the crime scene photos. I was thinking, you know, how fast would that truck have to be to go through there and then end up. You don't see my hands, but I'm trying to go,
yeah.
You know, like this and end up with the rear end in that position.
Yeah.
Could it happen possibly without being there, without having more witnesses to the fact? It's really hard, but you have to do your due diligence.
And I feel like the last time we spoke, and I could be incorrect, but I feel like you were trying to prove, like, if your approach was to, if you had a suspect, prove that they didn't do it, right? Was that kind of your approach? So can you look at this crime scene and then imagine a way that it would have happened to where Grant wouldn't have had marks on him from being dragged by a car?
The one theory that I had from this, trying to imagine, and I'm thinking like a defense attorney, is that the only way that he could have escaped with, and I'm also looking at the medical records that show the injuries that did occur. Mm-hmm. It showed that there was a laceration on the back of his head. The injuries to his jaw, to the back of his head. The only scenario I could come up with, and which leads me, I'm going about this all the way around. I'm sorry about that, but I'm trying to get to a main point, is that the only way that he could go is if it's rolling down, say, for example, you get out of the truck, right?
Mm-hmm.
He gets out. He hasn't seen his dad in a long time. He's maybe anxious about that. Maybe he didn't put it all the way in park. It looked like the console was like a shift, right? It was automatic transmission, correct?
Yes, yes.
And it was shifted up. Maybe he didn't get that in that all the way. So he gets out, goes to the back. For some reason, it starts to roll. He's panicking. I'm thinking to myself, what's a natural instinctive reaction to when it starts rolling? What would it be? And I'm thinking, is he going to panic and try to keep his truck from rolling downhill? Is he going to try to press his hands against the tailgate? It starts to roll back. And I'm not saying this is what happened. This is a theory that
right.
could come up. He's behind there. He's panicking. It's starting to roll back. Could be a possible slip. What if he grabs a hold of that tailgate and rides it down the hill, hanging on to the back of the tailgate and then possibly sliding and grabbing a hold of that back bumper to where he's like his legs are under the rear end of the truck because he's got a high clearance.
Mm-hmm.
So he's basically on his heels, sliding, rolling back, holding on to it for dear life.
Was his head facing the engine or was his feet facing the engine?
It look, I think his head was facing the engine.
So in that scenario,
which is where my scenario starts to die.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think logistically if, and that makes sense. He's an athletic guy. Maybe he did do that and the impact could have thrown him off and then he got ran over, but his feet were facing the wrong way.
And I thought about that. And the only other thing, the thing I could come up with, and like I said, I'm trying to think of all angles here, is that when it lurched downward and he might have fallen off at that time, or when he pulled down, that bumper came down and he lost his grip.
Yeah.
Because you do have a pocket maybe underneath there to where he might have, he was still alive at that time.
Right.
And this is getting far-fetched, but, once it starts to, you know, if he's left at the, where that ditch, becomes that pocket, if he falls down into that and the truck is coming back up, it's still maybe a little, some clearance
right
under there to where, and it starts to go back up. He's in that pocket. Was he cognizant enough after he hit the back of his head to try to go on his back towards the, to where he sees light?
Yeah.
And, which is in that pocket.
Yeah. And the timing of all of it, if you're trying to envision it, like weird things can happen, right? Like yeah. Between if his feet get caught in the grass and then like weird things can
and
happen.
It spins him around. Yeah.
Which again, I, having been there, I don't see how this happens, but weird things okay. do. So let's say it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we have this story from Aaron, and to be honest, it's really right. ballsy if he intended on killing his son to do it on this highway. So there's that. But if you're going to talk to him, how are you going to try to get to, because I mean, he is a dad that lost his son that day. So there yes. is that element. So what's that conversation like if you're trying to figure out as he's grieving, whether he's lying or not?
It comes a lot when you're I would approach it as a witness first, because it kind of goes with my approach of finding out what would make him innocent of this, you know, taking, right. you know, and finding out. But when I'm, first of all, there was no interview. So in my case, what I would do is I would have him give me the story again, go through it, knowing what his 911 call was. And you also, like you've stated in a lot of your episodes where a 911 call, you can't really tell by that, the stress factor, how they're going to respond.
Right.
So I would try to get him to, just to retrace the steps again, to redo the story. And then I would match it with what we've got. I'd try to pin him down on some of, you know, if there's conflicts to his story from the first time and his, that initial report that he's got, I would have that. And I would just try to have him reiterate the story over. And just try to go from there and see, from that point, if you're going to, you know, start pinning him down and just see where it goes at that point and just say, you know, if there's anything you want to tell us that's different, this is the time to do it.
Yeah.
I know Jamie doesn't like it, but I'm hooking that guy to a lie detector test.
Yeah, let's ask Gary about that. Where do you stand on polygraph tests? Are you a fan? How useful are they?
You know what?
We debate that often.
I think the last time we talked, I think I was kind of siding to where I'm not really a big fan of it.
Yeah.
But you know, I thought about it in this case, and it would not hurt for him to do one. I'm not meaning to swing the fence.
No.
I think you got to utilize every tool in your toolbox. And,
yeah.
And because there was no investigation at this point, I would like to just hook them up to one and just see how it goes. And I don't know logistically, like, is there a point that too much time has passed and you would pass one even if there is deception? I don't know. Yeah. I think that's contingent on every person, right? But
I think the fresher you have it, I think the better. I think the fact is, if you ask them to take one, I mean, it couldn't hurt to do that.
Yeah. I think his response to that request is really yes. important too.
I would definitely, I would be looking at his nonverbal cues while he's there as far as that. And like you said, if you're looking at, I was looking at the, you know, if it wasn't an accident, if he was trying to kill his son, then what it would almost be to where it would have been a situation where there was anger involved and mm-hmm. there was an argument. He responded, as far as anything premeditated, I could think of better places to,
yeah.
I wouldn't do it in the broad daylight in a parking lot. Yeah.
There was definitely tension in that relationship before this, and this was something Grant didn't want to do. So I'm sure that even if there wasn't some pretty major allegations going on before this event, their relationship wasn't great anyway. And so Grant was probably being a teenage boy who didn't want to be there, but it goes deeper than that. There were allegations of abuse.
Oh, yeah.
There are allegations that Grant is now an adult and he's going to go talk to authority about everything that's happened in the past. So definitely some motive in this case. But if I put myself as an investigator, I almost don't even look at the motive. I just look at the scene and does it fit the mm-hmm. story? And I can't say it does.
Yeah. I was having a really difficult time as far as trying to imagine what else. Another option is what happened. How did he get under there? I know there was talk about his glasses being up farther away from him. Mm-hmm. And I don't know exactly when the pictures were taken that could have taken, somebody could have moved them away from where he was and put them up away from it.
Yeah.
That happens. People, you know, a lot of times if you're, like I was an EMT for 12 years. And the first thing a lot of times you do when you're assessing someone, if they're wearing glasses, is you're going to take them off. And because you have to look at their eyes, you have to, you know, with the light, and you're going to take glasses off. Maybe, you know, I'm not saying it happened. I'm just saying this is what could have happened.
Yeah.
They could have either flew off, you know, as, you know, after he was under, and somebody might have just taken them and placed them to the side.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to imagine what else could have happened.
I don't know that I've ever said this out loud, but my thought has always been that if there was some kind of altercation, that perhaps it ended where Grant, by someone, again, this is complete speculation, not saying Aaron did mm-hmm. anything, but somebody sure. knocked Grant down into that ditch, and simply the fall and him hitting his head on the rocks was enough to do what it did and kill him. And then if somebody wanted to cover it up, driving the truck around and pulling it up from the road over top of his body.
Or putting it in neutral and just letting it do its thing.
Let it go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, maybe they got in an altercation. He didn't mean to kill him, but he got hit.
Or somebody else did it just to clear any legal
But then staged the scene to look like an accident.
So that's where I think it could have happened in a way where it was, somebody was at fault, not an accident, but they tried to cover it up after, as opposed to him. I agree with you. I don't think you plan ahead. I'm going to go to this highway across from all these businesses and commit murder. I don't think you do that.
No. I don't think so either. I think something happened impromptu and it was staged is what I think.
The only thing that bothers me about that is that if he let the truck roll, And it would have been really lucky coincidence that it ended up right over the top of him.
Yeah.
Because anything could have caused the, you know, if the wheel, if you're rolling a truck back and the wheel would just happen to turn a little bit, it could go.
Sure.
Most of the time it would just go out, like stay in the parking lot, but just face a different direction.
Yeah, it would just turn and turn about there.
Yeah. A lot of times if you have with that, it'll like just go, you know, sideways.
Right.
Why? Especially for 60 feet to have that continue in a straight line to go down there would have been quite a, but of course, having it end up like this on the other side from that far, that I was trying to think of what momentum it would take to have it go through there and go up the other side like that backwards. I would think it would take a lot of momentum.
And that's
to do that
without enough momentum to where it just goes back and lands on the tailgate and flips on its top. Cause it's that steep
ditch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's if, not going to just if it hits the tailgate rolling. in that rock and mud or whatever that is, it could very well, if it had enough momentum, could flip. Right.
So but it almost takes the perfect amount of momentum to land how it did. Like think, enough, right. but not too much.
I think looking at it, it makes a whole lot more sense for it to just come off the road into that position. Yeah. But again, there is tailgate damage.
I think that if you're looking at, that's where the autopsy would have been so crucial. Because you could tell with that blunt trauma to the back of the head, you could tell if it was caused by hitting his head on a rock or hitting his head on the side on the asphalt as compared to like a bat strike or something like that.
In situations like this, when this has been ruled an accident, but there's a lot of I don't know, there's been a lot of publicity on this case. Not even just us. I mean, we're nothing compared to some of the case or some of the people who have covered this case, Lauren Conlon, so many others.
Nancy Grace has gotten Nancy a hold Grace. Of it. That's usually a big moment.
Why not? If I'm a DA or if I'm, you know, a sheriff or whoever is in charge of this, why not open a case? Why not set some kind of a review of some kind? Or what legally can you do if, you know, who has to be the one to pull that trigger?
I would think it would have to be the prosecutor for your jurisdiction would have to. I mean, because they're the ones ultimately going to prosecute the case. They're the ones that decide who, whether you have enough evidence to proceed. So, I mean, I think the agency could go to the prosecutor and say, we're getting this kind of, you know, we're getting this kind of, not, you know, maybe pressure from, you know, if you have a petition with thousands, you know, hundreds to thousands of signatures on it, that's a lot of pressure to put on an agency. I don't know where it would hurt not to. Of course, I'm sitting here with in my mind with unlimited money and unlimited budget.
And I guess if I'm, you know, if I am the agency lead, you know, how are the folks working in my department going to view me as a leader if I say, all right, we're going to open ourselves up to scrutiny here, and I'm basically putting all of you guys on trial. So I almost get it from that perspective, but at the same time, you are a public figure and a public servant. And it does not look good. I mean, at some point you're going to have to, I don't know. It's a tough spot to be in. I don't envy that decision.
You have to weigh you would have to weigh the fact that, are you under scrutiny now or are you going to be under it later? That's a decision that they have to make.
Yeah.
The powers that be, I don't know how you couldn't, you might end up with the same result, but you, especially now as time passes, it's harder and harder to do that. I don't even know what's the proper word, exhumation.
Yeah.
Of him would yield. It might yield as far as it might eliminate some things that some ideas that are going around as far as what happened. Like I said, you might be able to tell if it was a blunt force from an object or a blunt force from, you know, hitting the back of your head. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, there's certainly a push to do that. And like you, I'm not sure what would come of it, but in my mind, if I had the opportunity, and again, I'm glad it's not my decision, like John said, but if I have the opportunity to put it to rest once and for all, I think that's great. And I think just doing a reconstruction, doing an investigation appeases a lot of people that are asking the questions. Like, I would love that. That'd be a great first step for me.
Great first step doesn't involve taking Grant out of his resting place. It is a simple reconstruction. And if it goes, you know, it happened the way that it appeared, that answers a lot of questions. But
yeah, I think if your investigation is under scrutiny, well, to say it was an investigation is a stretch. But if it's coming under scrutiny, I think you owe it to the public that you serve to at least put anything to rest, anything but you never know. You might have it come up and, you know, maybe something else did cause the death. You know, and then now you have to go a different way. But I think at a point you have to kind of suck up your pride and go, this is for the benefit of the people that we serve.
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as those words came out of my mouth, I remembered that you're in that position to serve people like Grant and not, you know, you do want to make a great work environment for the officers. And, but at the same time, you're there to protect the people.
You also want them to trust you as a leader. You want your community to trust you. And if the community is crying out for justice or an investigation of some sort and you're not delivering, I think that hurts the faith in the system there. And I think that's a lot of what we're hearing from that community.
Oh, absolutely. And if I was dead in this case, I would, and if I'm telling the truth, I would want it.
Right.
You know, I would want it to exonerate me. You know, this is what happened and this is what I saw. This is what happened. Go for it. You know, let's open it and do our due diligence and put it to rest once and for all. Because otherwise you're going to have that hanging over your head for the rest of your life. And I personally, as someone that had a son and lost a son, I would say that, you know, I wouldn't want anybody to think that I had done something unsavory to my son.
Right.
You know,
my son, my son struggles with some health issues, and I know, I haven't lost my son, man, but the love that you have for your kids, I don't think you'll ever understand it until you have one. And,
absolutely.
I would, if I'm Aaron, I would want, like you said, people to know that I didn't hurt my son.
Yeah. So,
and if I was interviewing him, that's partly how I would go about it. You know, I mean, I was in your shoes. I'm a dad. I have a son. I would not want people thinking that I did this.
Right. Gary, I hope at some point we get some evidence that we can revisit with you about this case. Obviously we could talk about this for hours and hours. And I think a lot of people have with things like the bat was missing. They found his phone like 2 weeks later. Like there are so many things we could rabbit holes, I guess we could chase, but I think you've given us a really good starting point for how to think about how this may be solved. And it's really just up to the decision makers to start to put some of those things in place. And once those happen, I would love to have you back on to dig into what it means.
Oh, that'd be great. I would love it. I'm going to keep an eye on it too, to try to, there was some, like I said, just if you're online, if you're researching, all of a sudden there was that article that I'd seen that I hadn't seen before. in the weeks that I was looking at it before. So I'm like, I really hope for both for the parents, for the families, I think Grant owes it, or he deserves every ounce of energy that they have to reopen it.
Yeah. Yeah. There are two parents involved here. And as much as Aaron, you know, if I'm in his shoes and I didn't hurt my son, I would want my name to be cleared at the same time. Aaron has a mother, and I feel like she's the one who probably has the most questions out of anybody that could ever talk about this case. And the offices there are saying, we're not going to answer those.
Yeah.
So prayers for her.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, her name is Angie. So prayers for Angie and her daughter, Grace.
I think it's the least week that anyone can do is to find out the truth. And it's really sad that they haven't gotten to that point yet.
Gary, as always, we appreciate, you know, we email all the time, and so glad we have you on here. So thanks for everything. Thanks for supporting us. And thank you for just always being there to chat about these
good
cases.
Luck with your pursuing your PI license. We'll put that thank to you, use like when
I
said, you get it.
I loved being here, and anytime I can help to come on, I know I email a lot, and so I appreciate you taking the time to read those, and we'll keep an eye out for it, and I'm sure there's other stuff down the road that we can talk about, and I hope you'll have me on again.
Yes, sir.
Yep, thanks,
look forward to it, Gary.
All right. Thank you.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.